pursuit of light, tracking light to its lair, my father used to say, track it back to its ancient home. So Abraham learned his religion by the study of the cosmos in the pursuit of light. He was then returned to his family when it seemed that the danger had passed. But now he became burdened by what is called the religion of the fathers, inherited belief, customary, often superstitious, religion reduced to such a shell of exotericism that no spirit remains in it. And his father was a seller of idols, and he enlisted Abraham in the making and selling of idols. Idols are the very symbol of the tendency of mind to fixate on objects where there is flow, to divide experience into subject and object. The idol is the grasping at the intangible. The idol is an attempt to make permanent what is ephemeral. The inability to let go. The literalization of the unspeakable. The concretization of the self in a monument. But Abraham wasn't fooled, and he wasn't good for business either. He ran the shop, but customers would come and say, I would like that idol. And Abraham would answer, how old are you? And the fellow would say, 30 years old. And he said, I made that idol yesterday. What good can it do you? So in that way, he brought down the wrath, not only of his father, but also of Nimrod, was the idol of state, the maker of idols of political power. There's always a relationship between external idols and internal idols. Our cognitive spiritual idols have their counterpart and consequence in the external world, in idolatrous institutions and the tyranny that follows from them. That's why the tyrannical powers are threatened by the message. Liberation of the heart from the fetishes that occupy it. Sets the stage for a liberation of peoples. So Nimrod captured Abraham and threw him into a fire, catapulted him into fire. And then a miracle happened. The burning wood sprouted leaves and flowers and vines, all wrapped up around Abraham. He was in the garden while in the flames. And This is a crucial principle of chivalry. One of the essential principles of chivalry is the fata, the chivalrous youth, has no enemy. Now, does that mean that the chivalrous youth, someone today said, we're young in spirit, even if we have white hair. That's the meaning of chivalry. Doesn't matter your chronological age. Youthfulness means not succumbing to jaded, cynical exhaustion, staying youthful in spirit, meeting each day as if it's new spring. So the chivalrous youth, the fata, is the one who has no enemy. Now, does that mean that the chivalrous youth is the one who is lucky enough that no one has given them trouble? Lucky enough that no one has given them a hard time or mistreated them in any way? How can that be? We're all subject to the vicissitudes of this world in all kinds of relationships, positive and negative. They affect all of us. It's not that. One would have to really hide oneself away to have no enemy in that sense. But the way of chivalry is not to hide. So it doesn't mean having no enemy. It means that one does not make, the one who makes you his or her enemy, you don't make him or her your enemy. You don't return the enmity. You don't meet conflict with malice, with ill will. You don't wish the other ill. It's a fundamental principle. Without that, there's no chivalry. With it, chivalry begins. Don't wish the other ill. So even if someone is opposing you, even if someone else comes at you full of rage, now, normally, if one isn't careful, rage is contagious. You face anger, you become angry right away. That person is angry, now you're angry, just because you're in the presence of anger. It's like fire. Anger is like fire. You know, the fire touches you and now you're burning. You never expected it. That person might have been angry all day. You were fine all day, but suddenly that person came in front of you. Now you're angry too, because you caught fire. But why? Is that really necessary? So this symbol of Abraham in the flames reminds us it isn't necessary. When there's a flame before you, bring the garden to it. Wrap yourself up in the garden. The flame can't burn you. Meet it with water. Meet it with flowers. Then it won't matter what's going on around you. You could be in the worst hell. Heaven is within. Unless you succumb to the impressions in front of you. Unless you succumb to fear. Fear because you imagine vulnerability. You unconsciously regard yourself as liable to be injured. But if instead you feel the seven heavens are here, God is here, the angels are here, all the holy messengers and prophets are here, eternity is here, forms change, everything sooner or later must change, But the givenness of all of this, the presence of the one who gives it, the mercy, the love at the heart of it all. Is a constant, is the essence. Then let them say what they will, let them do what they will, and even challenge it. Yes, meet it, stop it if it's unjust. But no need to fear, and no need for rage. If that one is enraged, there's an opportunity for compassion. Here is someone burning. Here is someone uncomfortable. Ill at ease. What does it mean to burn? In your the feeling in one's nerves, in one's limbs, in one's heart, in one's mind, that fire, that contraction, that tightness, that itch, that shaking. Could one wish it on anyone? And if it's here before me, may there be water. May there be ease. May there be mercy. May there flower here amidst the flames, a garden. No malice, no enmity. So the learning of this, the practice of this, is chivalry. Now, to say a chivalrous youth has no malice, well, you might think, but I do feel angry, and there are those who have hurt me, and I there's bitterness. I look back. There's a tightness in my chest when I remember what's been done. Does that mean this is no path for me? No. It means the path is to work with what you have. Work with what's in your heart. It's there. Now there's substance. The path is the very way of going forward. How do you work with it? All of the tools of chivalry are there. Understand. First of all, one has to see the divine creativity behind everything. Everyone one meets, one has to see there's a creature of God. There's a work of the divine artist. So in that sense, first of all, you have to see, we all have to remember that everything that is here has reached us from the infinite source. And from that source, it's followed a different trajectory than the one we've followed. But who is we? And who is they? We are the same, but if we had followed that trajectory, we would be they. And if they had followed our trajectory, they would be we. We're the same person. I am the one who is before me full of anger, insofar as that essence, which is the essence of me, has taken that root. And the same essence which has taken the root that shines through this mind, this heart, as I now know it, is inseparable from that. Then one can see it's the different roots that account for differing impressions, differing conditions, differing frames of mind. And we've reached this far, and this isn't the end. There's more to travel, more transformation still underway. If we can look at it that way, one can develop compassion which really means the ability to transcend the boundary of one's narrow subjectivity. Love always means going beyond the circumference of a separate self. When love is absent or love is narrow and diminished, it means the boundaries are hard and rigid. When love is strong, what is there? Readiness to give up one's own so-called own interests at the drop of a hat, because it's not a question. It's just, there is no difference between self and other, so one's interest is there. That's love. So it means that the boundaries are not so hard. So having no enemy, making these boundaries porous by understanding another, sympathizing, switching out from your point of view. So locked into this frame of reference, but imaginatively entering another mind. This is what contemplation teaches. Like Baba Farid, when he was a murid, and his murshid said, go and contemplate what you love. What do you love? He said, I love my cow. And he said, well, go contemplate your cow. And so he went into a little room and contemplated and contemplated. And then finally the murshid said, come, Fariduddin, come. He didn't come. He said, are you there, Fariduddin? And they just, the answer came, moo. And then went, no, Fariduddin, we're finished now. That's finished. Open the door, come out. Just kept coming to the door, stopping there. Come through. No, horns. Too large. So that's possible. That's where sympathy can take you that far. Getting right into the experience of someone else. But if you would just switch over and enter so fully into the consciousness of that other person, then you might find yourself trapped in that state. If that person is very angry, yes, you enter into their anger, you know what that anger is, but then you're stuck there. So one has got to see it, but also see beyond it. See what's there, but not get bogged down. Instead of seeing yourself or any other being as an idol, as a fixed monument of stone, see the whole of life as a flow. That's why to get to the island of chivalry, you have to swim. This is what is showing itself now, but everything unfurls. The plant contains a seed, the seed contains a plant. The story is never finished. So, curiosity. Openness to what is still to be shown. This isn't the end. This isn't final. We're moving. With open eyes. These are some of the stories of Abraham. There are more I want to share, but let's check in together. I want to hear from you, because you've been talking and reflecting and walking and hearing guidance from teachers and listening to music. So these stories of Abraham, do they have to do with themes that you've been contemplating today? like to hear from you. We have a microphone.
I will say something that's not an announcement for once. I was just really overcome to hear that Nur was put into the silsila, and it brought tears to my eyes, and I just wanted to... It's one of the... Oh, just hearing that, it was one of those moments where you think everything should just stop for a sec and take note. What a huge thing that is, the thousands of years, well, hundreds at least, represented in the silsila. It's a profound moment, and thank you, and those who thought to do that. Yeah. And as, you know, as a woman who's on the knighthood path, and I meet every 40 or so days with two other young women who are in doing the knighthood path, and we often speak of Nur. So I'm very excited to go back and tell them this. Yeah, thank you.
It was a powerful moment. That moment was like an opening between worlds when we had the silsila announcement, the official decree in several languages. We were gathered in the house in which she lived in Fazal Manzil on the day of the Urs, and to speak it into being. I almost couldn't do it for the tears. Really, I was overcome, could hardly speak, could hardly say the word, because
while you were speaking, I was so touched of the acknowledgement of pain and suffering that was endured. And very touched by the possibility of the continuance to move beyond it. And that feels very real to me, like palpable in the field. And that just leads to a gratitude that has been waiting to be felt for so long. Thank you.
This afternoon with Sheikh Sufi, he said that every morning he wakes up and he says, everyone I meet today is God. And my heart connected with the idea of chivalry being an individual who has no enemy. Because if you see every individual as God, they cannot be your enemy.
The friend, actually, is the name that was the last name that was uttered by Prophet Muhammad when he was leaving this world. His last exclamation was, Rafiq al-A'la, Rafiq al-A'la, the highest friend, the highest friend. So the Sufis have always known God as Yar, Dost, Habib, Mahbub, all of these words that mean the friend. I think it's time. Shall I turn to you, Alia?
We just have a little bit of announcements. There's more to come today. It's almost 5:30, and dinner is going to be available right when we leave here from 5:30 to 6:30. And we just received some news from Lewis and Clark in the kitchen. We asked them if it was possible for us to have another space to eat in addition to the cafeteria. This is not a usual thing that they do. When we were negotiating the space, they told us specifically we could never take any food out of the cafeteria. Now they're telling us very kindly, apparently they've booked more people on the campus than they ever have before. They broke a record this week. And most of them are under the age of 18. So we are permitted to eat also in the trail room, which is a dining type of area, a little bit more casual. And Mariam and I talked about having definitely, if you're coming to a meetup tonight or tomorrow or any day, all the meetups that are supposed to be in the cafeteria are now going to always be in the trail room. But otherwise, you have the option if you want to eat upstairs or downstairs. The only thing that was negotiated, this is the important part, well, two things. Once you leave the cafeteria with your food, you cannot go back into the cafeteria for that meal. So you need to get what you want and take it with you. And you have to return, we all have to do this, all of our stuff that we take, all the dishes, they're going to put bins outside the cafeteria upstairs specifically for us. So they've asked us, because their staff, they don't feel like they have enough people to run dishes. So there's some freedom in meal location. Is that good? Yeah. And Tasneem, do you want to say anything about what you're going to do tonight with us at 7:30? Or... Tasneem is leading an evening with us, and it will unfold in STAM. And if you've ever spent time with Tasneem, it's always spirit and organic presence and many, many elements. Oh, good. A lot of singing tonight. And, so we'll have dinner. There's some meetups during that time. If you can come to Tasneem, that would be great. And then we'll meet back. Gulruk. Is Gulruk in the... Oh, Gulruk is doing the morning meditation in trail room tomorrow at 7:15. And again, Jahanara and Stam doing yoga. And then Baba here at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. And Mariam had something.
Yeah, just for the meetups, if you're leading a meetup, now that we have this little change, which is so great, thank you. If you want to change the time at all, for any reason because of that, just make sure you change it on the whiteboard up in STAM and on this special copy that I'm going to leave in the trail dining room. So there's two updated meetup schedules for everyone to refer to. And table number 5 is going to be always a silent table. some people said it might be nice to have a silent place for meals, so the room will be not silent, but a silent table at least. And then we could use a hand. Are there four people right now who feel up for putting chairs back into a circle in STEM? 1, 2, 3, 4. Thank you. 5. Even better. So we'll go do that right now. Thank you. And we'll have a closing prayer before we go.
The video that's being shown in here for the meetups. We can't use this room at 6:50.
Do you want to say it? Okay. So they are showing a video in this room at 6:15. Yeah, we have to all vacate this room and not come back until tomorrow. Yes, okay, that's good. Yeah, thank you.
Thou who art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts that we may hear thy voice, which constantly cometh from within. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Most merciful and compassionate God, give us thy great goodness. Teach us thy loving forgiveness. Raise us above the distinctions and differences which divide us. Send us the peace of thy divine spirit, and unite us all in thy perfect being. Oh.